It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. You know, there are many people you might expect to criticize President Obama's management style. They criticize President Obama for a living, and you know who they are. But probably not Jonathan Alter. Alter, as you may know, is a leading liberal columnist and one of the president's biggest defenders over the course of two books, The Promise, President Obama Year One, and The Center Holds, Obama and His Enemies, about the successful reelection campaign. But in a new article in Foreign Affairs magazine, Alter, with his inside knowledge of and sympathy for the Obama White House, takes apart the president's management style for its failure to prevent the Affordable Care Act rollout debacle. Can the president and the health reform law recover their footing? Hi, Jonathan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
Why did you write this article and focus it so squarely on the president rather than on the failed contractors or anyone else?
Well, I think responsibility lies at the top. And also, there was a great puzzle for me, and I think for a lot of other people, about this. This was the president's signature program, his best bet for being remembered for something more than being the first African-American president. And you would think that the rollout of healthcare.gov, the problems would have been anticipated and the management of it would have been something that the president took more seriously. So I tried to look not at, you know, all the details of how it got messed up and where responsibility at the lower levels lies. You know, is it Kathleen Sebelius, Secretary of Health and Human Services? Is it CGI, the contractor? I was more interested in the cultural, if you will, you know, reasons why this administration has had a problem with management. And I guess what I concluded is that the president came to office with less management experience than many prior presidents. He'd never been a governor. He hadn't been in the private sector. He hadn't been, like both Theodore and Franklin Roosevelt, in the federal bureaucracy managing contractors, which they did as assistant secretaries of the Navy. So he had no such experience beyond managing his Senate office.
And we should say that this goes all the way back to the 2008 primaries against Hillary Clinton as an issue. One of her central arguments, I'm sure you remember, was that she had all this experience running things. Obama had only a few years running a little Senate office. All he's got is a speech, the Clinton line went. And defenders of Obama dismissed this line of attack as a Washington insider, Clinton, overemphasizing the value of experience over a fresh and untainted outsider perspective. And so all these years later, you come back to the experience issue.
Right, but with an asterisk. I don't think that his lack of experience was disqualifying and even that much of a mark against him, because there was so much else and continues to be so much else that's good about him. And I think generally he's been a very good president. The problem is he did not compensate for his lack of management experience. In other words, if you have a weakness going into a job, you need to compensate for that weakness by hiring people who are strong in areas where you're weak. It doesn't matter what kind of job it is. And so what he needed to do when he became president was to hire people who really understood management. And so I have a scene in The Center Holds, the more recent book I did about Obama, which I revisit in this foreign affairs piece, where a very senior, experienced CEO, retired CEO, who was for Obama and had raised a fair amount of money for him in 2008, saw the president-elect shortly after the 2008 election, and he said, you know, I saw all of your economic team in the Wall Street Journal today. I saw half a dozen of them. Not one has ever met a payroll. I'm not asking, the guy says, I'm not asking that, you know, all of them have be business people, but how about one guy who really understands how to manage a large organization? And Obama gave the same answer to him that he gave to a lot of people who asked about this, which was, well, I have Valerie Jarrett, and she was a CEO. But she was actually only a CEO for less than 18 months, and it was at the time that the campaign started, and she was not really spending all that much time running this housing company in Chicago, which was basically run by the founder. So she really did not have a huge amount of management experience. And on the tech side, they hired exactly one guy from the tech sector, a guy from Google named Andrew McLaughlin, who quit the administration in frustration after a year or so. And they had one other person, Jeff Zeinst, who was an entrepreneur and had run several businesses. And indeed, it's Jeff Zeinst who has been brought in to fix healthcare.gov, and he's done a good job fixing it. But they should have had 10 people like that, whose expertise they could tap to manage such an important project.
And so why? I mean, as you write about in The Center Holds, your book about the reelection campaign, Obama had the support of all these Silicon Valley tech tycoons, a virtual army, pun intended, of business leaders who know how to launch websites. It's one of the reasons that the reelection campaign dominated Romney, because they were so much stronger on social media and other digital platforms, where the people who work in that sector just tended to like Obama more. And yet he didn't tap folks from that pool to do the healthcare.gov rollout. Is it that he was just so ideologically anti-business?
No.
As most ideological conservatives accuse him of being?
No, this is a red herring. This is something that a lot of people in the business community like to say. It's not true. He is not anti-business. In his personal life, his closest friend is a businessman from Chicago named Marty Nesbitt. He understands the importance of business, but people hire within their comfort zones too often. And so he tends to hire people who are either come out of academia or out of government or Hill staff, Capitol Hill staff, who are more like him. And also he and Larry Summers, his original economic advisor, believe that business experience is not directly transferable to government. And in that, they are often right. In other words, just because you're good at running a business doesn't mean you're necessarily going to be good at running the government, although I think you could argue that Mike Bloomberg is an example, suggesting that business experience really can help in government. But it's true that it's not an exact fit. However, when there are particular projects like an IT project along lines of healthcare.gov, and they have great importance, there the overlap is more significant. And, that was really a business project, figuring out how to get a website up and running on time. And so I think there, why did they not have more people from business in the government? Partly because the vetting process is so onerous that a lot of business people just at this point don't want to serve. And the president did try recruiting some folks. The data geeks from the campaign who did such a great job in the cave, which is what I dig into in The Center Holds, how they re-engineered American politics and ran really the first digital campaign to get the president reelected. Those guys wanted to go in the private sector and make money. And surprisingly, few, if any, have ended up going into the government.
So we're almost out of time, but let's just look ahead to one of the possible consequences here. And, of course, we don't know if Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act is going to be a success over the long run. We only know what's happened so far, and you certainly don't bury it and hold out the very real possibility that it's going to be a success for the country in the long run. But in the short run, politically, one major consequence of the failure to launch well could be that the Republicans take control of the Senate in this fall's elections, because Obama's popularity has fallen so much on the basis of what has happened with this. How possible do you think that is, putting on your political analyst hat, and what would it mean for public policy, including the survival of Obamacare itself, if there's a Republican House and a Republican Senate in Obama's final 2 years?
On the first question, I think it is quite possible. I'm much more comfortable writing about things that have happened than prognosticating. But as it happens, the seats that are vulnerable on the Democratic side are in largely red states. And also the turnout is so much lower in midterm elections. In 2008, for instance, 130 million Americans voted. In 2010, only 80 million Americans voted. And so in those midterms, the missing 50 million voters were largely Democrats, which is why, the country's in this mess, which is the Republicans taking over the House, in my view. So there is a distinct possibility that it will happen again. The failed launch, even if it's fixed, gives Republicans more ammunition against Democrats who are running for cover. If it happens, Obama still has the veto pen. And this is, again, something obvious that people forget. So they can repeal Obamacare, and it won't matter because Obama will veto their bill, and they do not have the votes to override a presidential veto. But what we would get is no progress at all on the Obama agenda, and there would be a lot of other things, including, I think, some silly investigations of fake scandals, deregulation that is ill-advised and that the president would have a hard time consistently vetoing, and other things that I don't think would be good for the country, but it is not like Obamacare will be repealed even if the Republicans take control of the Senate.
Jonathan Alter, author of books including The Center Holds, Obama and His Enemies, author now of a new article in Foreign Affairs magazine, Failure to Launch, How Obama Fumbled Healthcare.gov. Jonathan, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Still to come, MFA versus NYC. We'll explain. And do all mayoral motorcades speed and break other traffic laws like Mayor de Blasio's got caught on tape doing last week? What should the rules actually be for emergency vehicles of all types on non-emergency trips? Stay with us.